The idea is that because of the nature, the Brahminical, the Kshatriya nature, is that it's based on, it has the element of regulation, has the element of authority. Because in knowledge you have authority, and in management, administration, there's authority. Right? In business, authority isn't the prominent issue. Authority only is useful in as much as, you know, you can make the business work. But authority isn't actually the main element. It's the profit. And so whatever will gain profit is what is looked for, right? Whatever actually works is looked for. And for the artist, whatever expresses his particular art, however it'll work, then he's happy, right? So you can see here it comes back more to oneself and what forms you can use that will gain what you're looking for. Does this make sense? So there's more of the element within the Vaishnava Shudra of simultaneous attachment to forms, but at the same time trying to be free from restrictions. You understand, it's a very interesting contradiction. Is that anything they do accept as forms religious, then they are the form itself makes the religion. Right? But for the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, thank you. Since authority is the main principle, so it's something subtle. Right? Because that's the aspect, is that that subtlety is actually what is the primary element. So then, authority means it always works, it's always there. So to function on that means that one has to understand the principles on which the authority is based. So that means on scripture and on the hierarchy of personalities who are following the scripture. Right? So that's more important. So that's why you see within the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, there's much less attention paid to, you know, age and other elements. It would be standard, of course, the older someone is, the more powerful he is, the more knowledge. So that's normal. Everybody accepts that, because the idea in logic is that something, a general rule is something that the scholar who can see subtleties can see and the common person can see, right? That's a general rule. It means everybody accepts it. So, you know, while something that's subtle, only the scholarly person will be able to appreciate, right? So then it gets more detailed. So the general thing is, yes, the older they are, the more time they've been at something, so the more they'll have learned, the more they'll have accrued, the more power, the position they'll have situated themselves in, more experience. But at the same time, that could be gotten earlier. Like, it's not uncommon a king is 16 years old. No one will complain. What? He's a kid. He's 16. No one will say that. Like that. You know, Abhimanyu, they're not going, hey, he's only 16. What's he doing out on the battlefield? Like that, especially after he wiped out one quarter of their army before noontime. So no one was making that point, right? So it's very important to understand that there's these principles that is being given here in the Shastra, and especially in our study here of the Manu, is these principles itself are what you have to function from. Because every time you go to apply them, the environment is always changing, always different. This is why others become bewildered and leaders don't, right? Because everybody else functions from the situations, right? But the, leadership doesn't do that. Leadership goes by principles, and then as the situations change, they can apply it, right? But the general person, they, in certain situations, you do this, right? They work backwards. But but if the situation is not exactly like that, then it doesn't function, right? Does that make sense? So it was just like you have, example would be someone who knows the science of cooking. You could give them any ingredients with any kind of outfitted kitchen, nice, not nice, or whatever, and they can cook because they understand how cooking works. And what they cook will be nice. But someone who only knows recipes, then the difficulty comes if something's missing in the recipe, or there's, you know, you want to grate something, but there's no grater. You know, they can't think, okay, I can't grate it, but I could cut it small, you know, or crumble it, or do something. It just won't come. No, it has to be grated. They can't function, right? So this is where the ritualism comes in. Attachment to the rules, attachment to the ritual. So when the Shastra says we're not attached to the rules, this is what it means. It doesn't mean we don't follow rules, right? That's how we'll take it. If the advanced devotee is not attached to the rules, then we'll say, oh, that means he doesn't follow any rules. That means he just does whatever he feels like. I like that, you know, and I've been around a while, so I'm advanced, so I can just whimsically do whatever I want. You understand? But that's not how it works. Brahmins and Kshatriyas don't work like that. There's principles, they always apply. It doesn't matter your situation. Yudhishthira, whether he's the emperor sitting in Indraprastha or he's the, you know, exiled and he's out in the forest. His activity is the same. His view of the world is the same. It doesn't change. Does that make sense? Duryodhana is going from, you know, they're just there himself and how he views the world, then Yudhishthira and the Pandavas show up and now his worldview changes. You know, and then they've gotten rid of it at Varanavata, now it changes again, and now he finds out that they were the ones at the Swayamvar who won Draupadi, you know, then it changes again. So he's constantly going through all these difficulties. Does that make sense? So the idea is in here is to take this knowledge and how would it be worked? So now to explain something, you have to give an example, right? In logic, you have your point that you're presenting, you'll have the reason you're presenting it, and then you give an example, how it works, right? Because the example makes it work. But the example isn't the only application. The example is something that's very clear and would be clear to your audience, right? But its application is much broader than that. Right? Does that make sense? Like, you know, give an example of, you know, okay, you take the knife, you put the potato on the counter, and then you put the knife on top of the potato, and you push downward. And so the potato gets cut, you know. So, okay, yeah, okay, now I understand how a knife works. Now what happens if it's a cauliflower? You know, then, oh, how does that work? You know, so we get bewildered. So that's very, very important is that one doesn't get bewildered like this, because that's what happens with the common person, right? That's the distinction between the common person and the leader, is the leader can think, you know, now they'll say think out of the box. No, what it means is he's thinking about the principle and applying it in ways that others aren't applying it. But the idea now, think out of the box, is completely new way of thinking. No, it's not. It's the same way of thinking. It's just you've gone beyond what everybody else is doing. Does that make sense? So it's very different. So because otherwise the thinking out of the box makes it feel like it's just, you just do what you want. It's just willful, just what I feel like. Yeah, I thought this. You know, it's very, you know, artistic. That's all. Because it's not, you know, because for Brahma, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, it's not a matter of, it can be something different. No, if it's not within the parameters of the rules, it won't work. Right? Does that make sense? So thinking out of the box means within economics, within administration, within education, you have figured out how to make it work in this situation that no one else has figured out how to make it work in. That's what you've done. Does that make sense? Right? Very important, because otherwise these things will come up in meetings and it sounds great. But why does it sound great? Because it sounds great to the mind, and just to the mind. And the mind is what? It's the 11th sense, right? And so the sensual platform, being the basis of existence, is the existence of Shudras. Does that make sense? Because the senses aren't the basis for the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. Because to do their duty, you have to control the senses, right? Direct it in a specific way, according to principles. Does that make sense? But for the Shudra, it's simply the engagement of the senses, right? You know, we're discussing occupation here, because in ashram, of course, it's engagement of the senses in relationships with others and trying to connect yourself and others to Krishna. But we're talking about in the occupation, right? Which is, you know, when we say administration, it's an occupation, right? So does this make sense? Because if one can understand this about the principles, then that means the devotional principles and these same principles, because all Manu is devotional principles being explained in the context of social and administrative, sciences. That's all. It's just devotional service. So if we can see that, then one can see its application in the occupation and in the ashram. So then the lifestyle is consistent with the work. Otherwise, like we were discussing yesterday, you have somebody, he's a great manager, you know, comes in at 9 o'clock like that, you know, leaves at, you know, 5 p.m. because, you know, hey, you know, we can't stay around here all day. We got things to do, you know, places to go, people to see, you know, movies to watch, you know, all that kind of stuff. So he's gone. And then it's kind of like, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of like somehow or another, he's a great manager, but his character doesn't match. And then it's a problem. You know, or you have the great temple president. He's fabulous. Everyone loves him. He's inspiring. You know, the kirtan's great. The classes are great. The community comes. Everybody's happy. But, you know, then somebody, you know, who's, you know, knows a little more about administration notices that they're $75,000, you know, dollars in debt, right? Because he doesn't know how to administrate, right? So then what do? You remove him and bring in, you know, some hardcore, you know, Vaishya guy who knows how to get the boys out there and, you know, pick it to the bone and bring it home to daddy, you know, and pay the bills like that. But in the meantime, the classes, the temple, the community, everything dissipates. But he paid the bills because that's the important thing. And so then it's gone, right? So here there's not a match between the two, right? But as has been pointed out, the one who could lead the community, he's actually the superior. So what should have been done? What should have been done is bring in someone else as the VP to make sure that they take care of administration and get all the bills paid. Right? But instead, no, he's a useless temple president because administration is the top. Remove him and put in this new guy, and then the whole thing changes and all that. Like that? Does that make sense? So yeah. So the idea is that if we understand these principles, we'll be able to balance both. And even if we can't, you know, it means we're better at one than the other, then we can get others to help in the other, you know. So ideally, at least the one is your ashram, right, in your personal life. But even if not, the Vaishnavas are there, we take that advantage of it, we get their association, and we're able to bring that about. So it means, in other words, if one comes more easily than the other, then you get help. And if the ashram works nicely, but problem in the administration, then you get people that can help. Does that make sense? But because you understand the principles, you'll still be guiding them. Does that make sense? You can have someone who's a really good manager but still doesn't understand the principles, right? That's the difference between the businessman who never went to school and the guy that's, you know, came out with his Harvard MBA that you hire. The MBA guy knows how to apply the things that he learned there, very sophisticated, into that environment. But if the environment changes, he does not necessarily know what to do, because, you know, the books change every year. You know, what they teach, you know, for the MBA this year, Harvard, it'll be different next year, right? Because the market changes. So you learn that. So unless you're connected with a Vaishya that's telling you what to do, then you'll get the experience. And then you start to with time. That's why for a Shudra, when he gets older, he's better. So when he's had his MBA, he's been doing this for 20 years, then he may start, he'll see patterns, but it doesn't mean he understands the principle. But he's just seen more stuff, so he's used to more situations. But the Vaishya, even though he doesn't have any experience at all, he sees the principle and the situation. That's why you have these, like we said, these kids in garages coming up with billion-dollar businesses. Right? Because they're Vaishyas. They see the principle. They see the opportunity. The same thing's been sitting there for years, and other economists didn't see it. They saw it. You understand? So the leader will always be a leader. That's the why. Okay, and then let's take this another perspective on why this is important. A leader is always a leader. You never stop being a leader because someone else has power or influence or money. That's always the worry, is that, you know, we're in the senior position now. If the younger managers come in and take over, what's our position? But if you understand the principles, then you're always a leader. Right? Because you'll always be able to guide them. And even if they're able to see the principle, yes, but you've been seeing the principle for longer than them, so you have more experience. So they will always value your guidance. So you always have a position. Very important, because traditionally speaking, you don't administrate beyond when you're 50 years old. You can manage beyond that. Everyone manages. But administration, it's expected that administration and economics, you know, you'll retire from around 50. Does that make sense? But preachers never retire, right? Senior Vaishnavas don't retire. Well, I'm retiring from being a senior Vaishnav, you know, like that. I'm senior Vaishnav emeritus now, you know, like that. Does that make sense? If that's understood, then you have a very healthy environment where your top of society is your top preachers. Because that's the core of this mission. If we think of Lord Chaitanya, what do we think of? A great administrator? Good businessman? Sharp? You know, top, you know, how you say, Brahminical, you know, pundit, good at all the rituals and everything? Artist? No. We just think a preacher, right? Prabhupada. He was the best manager. He was the best at economics, right? He wouldn't let one cent get, you know, go by. He was telling, I think, Shatadanya, says 1 cent. You know, if you waste 1 cent, then 1 cent times 10 is 10 cents. 10 cents times 10 is 100, is a dollar. Times 10 is $10. Times 10 is 100. Times 10 is 1,000. Like this, $1,000 is wasted. You know, so his point was, you watch the cents, and then you have control over the tens of thousands of dollars. So he was very expert in this. Music. No one is better than Prabhupada at music. We'll think it's very simple. It's extremely high-level Indian classical music, but it's just taken out all the what we're used to, all the all that stuff, right? That's taken out. But what's there is technically pure classical music. Those who know music understand this. Cook, there was no one better than him, right? Dressed so, you know, nicely and just, you know, with whatever he had. I've seen him give him dhotis that were, you know, just up to his knees and super long. You know, they just didn't know what they were doing. Probably to wear them. He'd wear them with such, you know, dignity that they looked fine. When you look at a picture of Prabhupada, you don't look at his clothes. You just see him, right? But if you look carefully, every time in every picture he's wearing something completely different, because he just wore what devotees gave him. And sometimes it's pretty wild, you know? You know, he's got one, I think in L.A. he had this long overcoat that had, you know, peacock feathers tied onto the strings, you know, stuff like this. You know, it's like you have this sophisticated, you know, like, you know, overcoat with peacock feathers, you know, stuff like that, you know, but Prabhupada's wearing, he's great, you know? And very rare. I think there's a picture of him in Regent Park with TKG. It's in wintertime, I think. That one story of where he fed the ducks and he said the ducks will take human birth. There he has this black overcoat and this black kind of furry, like kind of like Russian hat almost like that. But it matches, so it's very sophisticated. He looks very dang. So the point is Prabhupada was expert at everything. But you don't think of him as, you know, oh, he was a cook or he was a this. You just thought of him as a devotee. You understand? That's the mission. So the top of the mission is the devotees, right? Then to see that it goes on, then you need administration, you need economics, you need all these various arts that are there, right? All the different scholarly aspects, you know, and ritual. But those are all in support of the devotional process. Does that make sense? If that's clear, then it makes all this fall naturally into place. It's just something you do. It's not something that is your identity. Right? We're not administrators by identity. We're devotees. And we can administrate by nature. And someone else does something else. So the idea is, that's the meaning of Sankirtan. You need all of that to make the whole mission work. But bottom line is, you can just chant Hare Krishna and it all works, and if you have none of that. Prabhupada sat under a tree. You know that always, you know that the picture of the Prabhupada sitting in Tompkins Square Park, you know, under the tree and all that? Do you know where that tree is in the middle of the sidewalk? I always thought it was, you know, on the lawn and that. No, there's all those, you notice fences. All the fences say you can't go in where the lawn is. It says stay off the grass. So he's sitting in the middle of the road, you know, the walkway under the tree. You know, so that's it. You know, sitting under a tree, you know, on cement, alone, in a place he's never been before. Nobody knows him. You know, has no facility, and he doesn't even have a mridanga, right? He has this little bongo drum, right? You know, would that mean then the Czechs would do well over there? You know, because the little bongo drum, like that. So he had this little bongo drum, and then he's. Does this make sense? Yeah? Okay, so. Okay, well, back into the rituals, right? You understand? So, in other words, there's the principles we're trying to draw from here up to now is the varieties of authority, right, and character. These are, okay, we call guru, prescription of students, okay, anishisa, okay. Okay, then I think we're 31, 4 to 8, prescription for students. The student who has been initiated must be instructed in the performance of vows and gradually learn the Veda, observing the prescribed rules. So he's been initiated, he's been instructed how to perform his vows, then he learns the Veda and all the rules, right? So in other words, we see the first thing is character. Character is trained first. Then once someone has the character and they're steady, then you give them that extra knowledge and regulation and rules and all that, the detail. Does that make sense? The first thing is the basic principles of what is spiritual life, what is the proper character and all that. When that's strong, then you can get into detail. Right? So here, in other words, it's prescribed rules and that. So like studying manu. You don't study manu when you first walk in the door. Right? This is for someone who's developed character, developed that steadiness, understands the philosophy. Because this is also smriti, so it's after the shruti. So for us, the Bhagavatam and that's the shruti. Right? That's our main books. That's the Veda for us. So having understood Prabhupada's books, then you study these things. So these come gradually like this. Right? Someone shouldn't jump in immediately. You know, it's not a matter of pride, it's just a matter of won't work. You don't have character, this stuff doesn't work. Right? The holy name works whether you have character or not. This stuff doesn't. It's like the Gayatri. You don't have any good character, the holy name still works. But you don't have good character, the Gayatris don't work. So it's not a matter of just, you know, hurrying things up or this or that. It just won't work. Because unless you're situated in goodness, the Gayatris don't give that effect. That's why it comes later, you need more qualification, but that's why it's not higher. You understand? The holy name is the highest, though you get it first. And the Gayatri's down from that, you get it later when you're more advanced. Why? Because unless you're advanced, it won't work. You know, it's just like when you go to learn driving, you know, do we trot out the Ferrari? No, you're learning something that's a little bit more simple, right? Does that make sense? You know, because it's straightforward. It always works. You can take it anywhere. You can't take the Ferrari anywhere. You know, when you go buy groceries, you know, right? Go drive up to Tesco's. Or where do you put it? You know what I'm saying? There's no place to put it. So it's very specific. The holy name takes you back to Godhead. The Gayatri's only designate a more specific direction where you're going in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? You have Vishnu Gayatri's, you're going to Vaikuntha. You have Ram Gayatri's, you're going to Ayodhya. Does that make sense? You're having other formal Gayatri's and you're going to Dwarka or Mathura, right? Our Gayatri's are for going to Vrindavan. But it's not that they're the ones that take you there. They just refine it so it brings out that understanding of what the holy name's already doing, because the holy name was the first of all mantras. Then came these other Gayatri's. Does that make sense? Like that. So because it's the principle, that's why it always works. And these others, they're the application, the detail, right? There's Nama, the holy name, and Nam Atmika, or whose life is the holy name, right? This is also one thing, because it came up the other day, we were discussing about initiation, is that when you've gotten the holy name is there, you're chanting the holy name, right? So then one qualifies for second initiation, one gets that. Now, if the guru disappears, or some way is not functioning in a way that one would be, you know, pleased with, then, but the point is how are those Gayatri's functioning, right? Because we think they function on their own, because we take it as another initiation, and they stand on their own, right? Just like we think, you know, the material world stands on its own. But it's only because you're chanting the holy name that these have potency, right? Does that make sense? Right. So the point is if we're chanting, the mantras still work. What's missing is someone to guide you in how to apply the benefits of that mantra in your life. Therefore, you find a Siksha Guru, right? Because the Diksha is still alive because you're chanting Hare Krishna. Does that make sense? Because the holy name is not bound by the rules. Does this make sense? Okay? So in other words, if the principle is there, everything else has life. If you haven't caught the principle, then if the detail is in touch with the environment that it thrives in, then you'll have life. But if the situation changes, you'll have problem. Does that make sense? Right? Like, you know, just like this thing of changing from having a, you know, the temple as the only thing functioning in a city to then having a community. That's a different environment. So if you understand the principle, the point is that the temple is the center of the devotional process. So whether it's just a temple or a temple and a community, it doesn't matter. It's still the center. That's the principle. But detail will be different because dealing with this temple devotees, it's a few people in one environment, in the communities, another environment. But the principle is the same. So now it's just a matter of finding how does that detail apply? How does the temple inspire? How does it lead? Does this make sense? You know, so then one could say, otherwise then times change and people fade and, you know, does that make sense? But it's still the same. Okay. Whatever dress of skin, sacred thread, girdle, staff, and lower garment were prescribed for a student at the initiation. Like must again be used at the performance of vows. In other words, what it is that you wore for initiation, that's what you wear when you do other things. Right? So if you're initiated in a dhoti or in a sari, then that's what you wear when you do other vows, when you worship the deity and you do other things like this. Does that make sense? That's just how it works. That's your dress. Does that make sense? You know, unless there's an ashram change, then there's the ritual that changes the ashram, there's a dress. Does that make sense? The grihastha, then he'll wear white and things like this. The sannyas, and he'll wear a different kind of outfit. That's what you wear for performance of your vows. Does that make sense? Yes.
During the initiation, the vows are not clearly pronounced, or one doesn't promise really to follow the regular principles to chant.
But you said you're going to chant, you're going to do that.
Then, you know, try to follow, try to chant.
Yeah, yeah. They'll say that. For themselves, they'll say you try. But if they're talking about our initiated devotees and they want to initiate them, then they'll say, well, if you weren't fully sincere and fully committed, then you weren't actually initiated. You understand? See the contradiction? Total contradiction. Because for themselves, a new person comes off the street, doesn't even know what's going on. They'll initiate them. Just, oh, you're sincere, you try to do, you chant how many rounds, what is that one? Don't let the beads get cold. You know, they have all these like little nice sayings, you know. And so that's all right as long as it's their people. But if it's our people, then, oh, well, unless you were like, you know, a Madhyamadakari and fully understood everything or totally committed and have no doubts in any way about your guru, then you're not actually initiated. So therefore, you come and we'll initiate you. You understand? So they use, the trick is how to initiate people. That's all. That's the trick. So that's what it's talking about. Because for us, you know, it's like, how often do you have where someone gets initiated where there isn't the idea that they should be qualified? You know, occasionally it's like, okay, we need some pujaris or something like that, and so some people that you would have waited a little bit more, but, you know, it's okay. But there's a consideration there. You know what I'm saying? So this idea that someone would just initiate people just to initiate, just to increase the numbers or whatever it is, we don't think like that, because we've been trained to not do that. But it's one of the points of the offenses to the holy name. To instruct the faithless means the person who hasn't come up to the point of actually being qualified, and you're instructing him as if he is. You know, in other words, you're initiating people who aren't qualified. If there is that element where they have that feeling, even if that's for that moment, that they will, you know, they feel themselves connected to the line through this person, and that person accepts them, then you would say the connection is made. But how strong that connection is, that's another point. Because remember, it goes both ways. If they didn't promise anything, then it's just a matter of how much that guru would want it connected. So just, you know what I'm saying? You want to know another fun like that, that is totally, I'm not sure if anybody in our society even knows this. I've mentioned it many times, but there may be one or two, but generally nobody even knows this. In the Gaudiya Mat, second initiation is initiation. Before second initiation, you're not initiated. Right? It's just the person is your nam guru. Right? And so to signify that then means that you've taken up the chanting, then they may give you a name and you know, you wear the neck beads and like that. So how we break the into first and second, they take first as just, we say it's nam guru, but meaning that you are initiated and you are connected. But in their mind, it could have been anybody. So you see in the literature, because in the literature, what happens before is that first and second went together. Pancharatrik Diksha, first and second, it's one package. Bhaktisiddhanta broke it into two levels because previously, those who were qualified came looking for a guru. And then, then they would get first and second together. That's just how it would work. But he divided it into two because then the persons are coming from all varieties of backgrounds. So there's no, they don't have that same qualification. And so therefore, the first is there, and you give some time before the second. So it's one initiation, just you've made it into two parts. So therefore, it's considered. Therefore, the first is just the first half of the second. So it's not until the second is completed, then you're initiated. But it's already, the process has already started, right? Yes. Yeah, it means anybody could give. Means that's what I was going to get to, is in the Shastra, therefore, when you see someone is his Nam Guru, like it's talking about, I think, I can't remember which one of the Acharyas, but one of the old ladies of the community that was, you know, serious into chanting when he was like 5 or 4 or 3 or something, she became his Nam Guru and, you know, told him about the holy name and got him chanting. In other words, whoever gets you chanting japa, that's your Nam Guru. But it's a branch of the Siksha Guru, so it's not like the Diksha Guru, right? So they'll take it like that, that now somehow or another, even though it was broken as one system, as one ritual, you know, so the first three parts of the Diksha and the last two is second. You know, it means you have your neck beads, your tilak, and the name of Krishna's associates. That's the first three. Right, and then the Gayatri mantras and worship the deity, the last two, right? So somehow or another, by misunderstanding or their practice, they've taken this thing of Nama Guru, means the person who, in other words, the Vartma Pradarshak Guru, who gets you chanting or gets you interested in the process, and the person who's doing first initiation. All these aren't really initiations. You could get it from anybody, literally. So if you have this, you know, let's say like this, in this case, you went to Sridhar Maharaj's mat and you got, you know, what we'd call first initiation. In their minds, you're not initiated. You're technically not committed to that mat. So you could walk out and go next door to the Devananda Gaudiya mat and take second initiation from, you know, at that time, Vaman Maharaj. Right? And no one would say boo. But once you've taken second initiation, that's your mat. So if you took second in Sridhar Maharaj's mat, you're part of Sridhar Maharaj's mat. That's just the way it is. You understand? So that's how, when our devotees who don't understand this, and the Gaudiya mat who know we don't understand this, then they would go through the ritual of this first initiation. And we would our devotees think, I'm initiated into this mat, now this person's our guru. And so then when the GBC would go and say, you're initiating our devotees, they would say, no, we're not. Because on their perspective, you're not. So then we made the rule, anyone initiated there then has to stay there, they can't come back, and this and that, blah. All we had to just said was, okay, anybody who's not second initiated, if you want to come back, now's the time. And you probably would have gotten hundreds more devotees, because not that they don't, rarely that you'll find anyone over there that has second. You know, come on, they're Westerners, you know. Gives Westerners second initiation. Hey. Yes?
Maharaj, how should we deal with the devotees who are going to Gaudiya Math and their spiritual master has left the planet, or their association is broken, and they want to approach this community?
Pleasant, but the point is that this is the rule. No Gaudiya Math would allow you to be in their Math and talk about another Math. You're in their Math, you follow their rules and do their whatever they do. That's all. You don't try to get others connected to their mat. It just doesn't work. No Gaudiya mat on the planet would allow it. But somehow or another, every Gaudiya mat expects we'll do it or we're not broad-minded. But who says that? Not the Indians. The Westerners. You understand? They're the ones who say this. Indians never say this. They're very strict about this, and they really make a difference. There's no Westerner who can do the deity worship or serve prasad in the Mathura, you know, Gaudiya Math with Narayan Mars. They can't do it, you know. Only the Indians can do that. In the West, then you do, because that's all there is. But in India, they don't have a standing. They're saying, this is the funny part. And then we're the ones that are not broad-minded and are narrow-minded and ritualistic and all that. So if they're sincere, see, this was Prabhupada's standard. If they had the approval of their Acharya and they came and stayed with us, followed all our rules, you know, that means including, you know, the, what the GBC says and everything like that, then they could, they would be. And as they are, if they were second initiated, they get all the privileges of someone second initiated. If they're first, then they're not. Then when they're qualified, then they have to go to their mat and get second initiation, and then come back. So we had, I remember as a brahmachari in the 70s, two or three Gaudiya Mat brahmacharis from, you know, that stayed with us because they wanted to preach, they wanted to distribute books. But they had to have their matzah, you know, recommendation. But nowadays, is how much that's there. But the point is that they have to follow the rules. There's no question, oh, we're this, we do things different. No, you're here, you do what we do. You don't like what we're doing, hey, go to your mat. Great. Enjoy. You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it is. And it's the way they run it. It's the way we run it. None of this sentimental, try to bring in all this modern stuff, because the Gaudiya Mat doesn't buy it one inch.
If such a person who is like the so-called first initiated in Gaudiya Mat comes back to ISKCON, then he should again get properly initiated in ISKCON again with changing the name or everything?
No, I mean, if the name's there and it's been given by a bona fide Vaishnav, why, I would tend to just leave that. But I would just say when they're ready for second, then they should take initiation from an ISKCON guru. And then now they're an ISKCON devotee. I would just leave that alone because it's there. That part has been done. But they don't consider, because they've given it, you're connected with that personality or that mutt. So I would just roll with that. You know, does that make sense? In other words, their rules apply in themselves also.
Because somehow, like, in Czech, we also have quite a few people like this, and because they didn't promise anything, you can just see that they are just the same like they were before.
You can say, but I would tend to just respect the relationship that's there, and just when they qualify themselves for second, then they get second. But the point is they're going to function within the society and they want to integrate into the society, then they have to find Siksha Gurus. So the point is the Siksha Gurus now will be someone within, functioning within ISKCON. You know what I'm saying? But you leave that other thing. You know, it's just like you have these second generation kids, you know, so they've been given the name Krishna Das. So most gurus just leave it at that. They don't change it because it matches the name, just like, unless you make some slight adjustment, like Prabhupada's name was Abhay Charan. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave him Abhay Charan Aravinda, like that. He didn't really change it because the name is given according to the nakshatra, so it's the right kind of name anyway. And it's already a name of Krishna. You know, if it was, you know, how you say, you know, a local name from here, then you might consider changing it like that, you know. You just deal with them like with that name and that, because that'll inspire, and just like this. But the point is they'll only get second when they qualify. That's all. You know what I'm saying? Leave that. This is what we're saying. Get to the principle here. Don't get attached to that external, because the point is they were trying something and this and that. So they, when it, just like, let's say someone is as a sannyasi from the Gaudiya Mat, then I would have it that he just functions as one here, even if he wasn't somebody that we necessarily would have given. Because the point is the Gaudiya Mat in philosophy is no different from us. You know what I'm saying? We're going to the same, basically the same place. We won't necessarily be in the same spot, you know, but we'll be in the same place. Because you have to remember, Goloka Vrindavan is 51% of the spiritual world, right? So it's pretty big, right? You know, we're impressed with the smallest universe out of all the universes floating on the causal ocean is big. And this is just, you know, a mustard seed on 1/4 of the cosmic creation, right? So there is 51% of 3/4 of the cosmic creation. So there's a lot of Vrindavan there. There's a lot of Braja Vrindavan. So you're talking about unlimited devotees. So the members of God, they're going to go Loka Vrindavan. So that's it. You know, they'll be in Braj and things like that. But it doesn't necessarily mean they'll be in the same place we are, like that. You know, if they are, you know, if they happen to be around, we have no problems. But it's not that, you know, it's not that we're, it's, we understand that we're not necessarily going to be standing in the same place. That's all. Does that make sense? Where Prabhupada's standing, that's where we'll be. And where they are, that's up to them. We don't, we're not worried. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in one of the introductions, the opening to one of his books, he's making the point, the same principle, but on the principles you have all these other gopis. Right? You have Radharani's camp, and then you have all these other gopis. Right? So we respect all those other gopis. And we appreciate their service to Krishna and their greatness of devotees and all that. But at the same time, we keep our distance. Because we have our line, and that's it. We're satisfied. We don't need to deal with them. So we're respectful, but we stay out of their way. So unless there's a reason for being together, like, you know, you're putting together some big program, like the Maharas, then all these different groups work together. But otherwise, we have nothing to do with them. You know what I'm saying? So the same thing is there, same, but we have not much to do. Does that make sense? So the point is that if there's any element that they're there, they're chanting and like this and that, then we leave it at that. Because the point is we wouldn't have given them first, because for us, first is part of the diksha process. They have given because they don't consider it part of. They're dealing with what we call first as Namaguru. Like new, the new guy walks in the door and we convince him about the importance of chanting and gets a set of beads and he walks off. So all they do is add a name to it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So we leave it at that. It is what it is. Just leave it alone. Don't try to compare it to ours. The point is when you integrate, then the qualification for second initiation, that must be what we would be comfortable to recommend. Does that make sense? You know, they're from another, you know, practice. So therefore, you know, you leave it at that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so it's like the person's from a different state, so they have a few different rituals that they do in the morning and this and that. That's fine, but if they want to marry into your family, then they change to your rituals. But if they're not married into your family, if they follow their own, what do we care? As long as they don't get in the way of us. Does that make sense? So that's broad, because then no one can complain, you know what I'm saying, that you're not accommodating, but at the same time, we're not changing our standard. Because it's like you have second generation kids who have names also, who, you know, may be doing as much or less than them. So that's not the big deal, you know. The seriousness is at second. That's why it was split. Because when the Gayatris are given, that's when seriously then, you know, the acceptance of the karma and everything is there. Because then you're dealing with the deity worship and other things like that, so the offenses are greater. Is that okay? Yeah. You know, so in other words, if you relax, they'll be able to relax, but it doesn't mean relax means being naive. We relax, but we're smart. We know the thing. You know, like that. Is that okay?
Because it's
Namaguru, and it's gone from, you know, 16 down to 4 down to 1. You know, so that's all. So it's not. So they have a name. Then it's nicer to call them by their name than, you know, Jose or something. You know, so it's you know, it's nice. But the point is then it's between them and their guru. What happens after that? Because then they have to find someone. Because you have to have someone who's giving you siksha. Like that, you know, so it's like that. So it means they don't understand the process, so it increases the numbers. See, the problem is we think that it's in, that now they're all initiated Gaudiya Mutt devotees, so we'll leave them alone. But they're not. most all people who would claim to be Gaudiya Mat devotees aren't. They happen to be taking siksha from there, but that's it. But dikshas, they're not actually connected to the mats, unless they have second. Now here's he disappeared. Another fun, if you really want to have more fun here, is that this is not all the mats, but some of the mats do this. Or for some individuals, they'll do this. Generally, from what I've seen, is for, those who are, let's say, Prabhupada, or someone who's been around a long time or stuff like that, is that in the Brahma Samhita, then if you follow the verses, those first 28 verses, then there's that point where Krishna plays his flute, and the sound of the flute enters his ears, and then he's initiated, as in the Vaishnava process through the Kama Gayatri, right? Because there's always something. This time it's Kama Gayatri, and in one university was initiated with that Ugram Viram Mahavishnum. That was the mantra that he created with, like that. So the Kama Gayatri is his initiation, right? So now he's Dvija. But this is the interesting part. If you notice before that before, when he didn't know anything, he was given the Gopal mantra, right, to chant. And from chanting of that, it brought him to the point of being qualified for diksha, right? So for us, that means that first one would be the holy name, and that qualifies you then for diksha. But in this case, because you're dealing on the Vedic level, then he got a Pancharatrik mantra, right? So some of the mats will use that, they'll give Gopal mantra along with the first. It's still, you're not connected to that mat. It's just part of the siksha process to help you mature so you can get to that platform. So that would be even more why the first devotees who were going there and would get first, they would generally give that. So then they were thinking, I'm second initiated. So they didn't even know that they weren't even first, but they thought they were second. And we thought they were second, but they weren't. So you'll find that also sometimes. But by the sounds of it, nowadays as they're going, then it's just, it's just you walk in, they give, some name, give you the beads and forget it. In a sense? That's just how they function, yes. Yes. So means the point is that ISKCON means those who are followers of Prabhupada. Right? So that means Prabhupada will be there and will be with him in that pastime. Does that make sense? Because you're always standing behind somebody, right? So there's Radharani, the Astasaki, then you have the Manjaris, headed by Rupa Goswami. Then behind that, then you're going to have, Jiva, Krishnas, Kaviraj, Narottam, Vishwanath, Jagannath, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gorkishordas Babaji, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Prabhupada. So we'll be in that line, in that group. Does that make sense? Basically we can fill up that pastime with that group. Understand? Because you have a group, and then Radha and Krishna are expanded. Then there's another, and another, and another like this. And there's all kinds of varieties of... So that's why we say Braja Vrindavan, because there's a variety of manifestations of Vrindavan. Like the Nimbarkas also worship Radha and Krishna in spontaneous devotional service, but they don't accept Vipralamba. So in those pastimes, Radha and Krishna are always together. Like when we worship the deity, they're all together all day. So they also have the Astakaliya Lila, but they're together during all of it. So it's a different Vrindavan, right? You also have lower Vrindavan. Vishwanath talks about that. Aishwarya, where Radharani, she goes to the Rasa dance flying on a swan airplane with 10 million maidservants. So it's a big, big swan airplane, right? And so it has that element of the sweetness, but it also has that formality. And great, or not so much formality, but opulence, by that greatness, that majesty. So it's a bit of the mix of these. You understand? So will be in, you know, that place where Prabhupada is in Braja. Does that make sense? Yes.
That means like at the initiation, then the importance of the reality comes.
That's who you're with. That's who you're going to be with in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
You know.
So this, you get this harmony like that in the local life.
But there's a difference when.
But they're still like.
That means the point is your main connection is through siksha.
Yeah.
So since they are connected to the siksha through that particular line, that's where their sentiment's going to go. You know what I'm saying? So that is their connection. But what we're saying is we're looking at it from the diksha angle. And I was pointing out is there is no connection. There. It means, of course, there's some siksha connection, but it's not fixed. But once you get second initiation, then you're fixed to that particular acharya, that particular mat. But until then, any member of the Gaudiya mat could move from one mat to the other, as long as they'll take them. Like that. There's no rule until you get, until the, you know, the second initiation is there. We call it second, right? They'll do it, you know, I guess. Does that make sense? So that's what we're meaning. But naturally, because the siksha is there, that's where their allegiance is. But the point is that just as they went over there, they could come back, you know. Yes.
So that Narayana Maharaj's philosophy is mixed with something else like the Nimbarka philosophy.
It has elements, yeah, of the Nimbarka, because he doesn't believe in separation either. So in that way, philosophically, he's closer to the Nimbarkas than he is to the Gaudiyas. Like that. Try telling that to one of his people. But that's the reality. Like that. Yes. Can be if they see it like that, but if they've changed their allegiance, because then who that siksha line is, that's where they'll go. You know, so if they, you have those who have both, Sridhar Maharaj and Prabhupada, and Ryan Maharaj and Prabhupada, and like this, so, but you'll see is where do they situate themselves? It's Sridhar Maharaj and Prabhupada, but they situate themselves with Sridhar Maharaj. So they'll be in such a situation that they'll be able to cross between the two. But their main situation will be with whoever is that prominent person. You know. Does that make sense? So that's why when these things aren't a game. That's why Prabhupada was so strict about it. You know, because we don't understand is that it's the mood that decides where you are. Right? What's the difference between Vrindavan and Dwarka? It's the same people. It's the mood's different, right? Or the difference between Dwarka and Ayodhya, or Dwarka and Vaikuntha. The mood is different. So that's what establishes it. Because Krishna is one Krishna. It's just what mood that you have towards him that defines how he'll reciprocate. Does that make sense? Yeah. It is sad, but they feel they're inspired, and so then better they're inspired than not. I don't know that they'd want to hear, and generally they would think that we don't know. See, so means I know, and some others know because in early India. Then you lived in the same place as them. Like here is that we have our place, and then there's the Gaudiya Mat. But if you notice in Mayapur, there's us, and then there's about another 15 or 20 Gaudiya Mats. So previous means now it goes on, but you won't see it there. But you know, whenever one of the Gaudiya Mathas has a program, you know, the Vyasa Puja for their guru and like that, then the norm is that they invite the other Mathas. And so each Mat sends their representatives, a couple of brahmacharis or, you know, like this, or if the Swami knows the person, they have a relationship, he'll go with a couple of brahmacharis. And so then they have this very formal kind of scene like that. But because not like Mayapur is so big, even if we send the two or three brahmacharis, you won't know that because they're coming from the Bengali brahmachari ashram, and you won't know. So before you didn't have that. That it was so big. So the brahmachari ashram was just, you know, who was there. You know what I'm saying? There was the, you know, if you were Western or Bengali, it didn't matter. You were following the same. So then you had a group of brahmacharis who they could follow the Gaudiya Math etiquettes and not have them criticize ISKCON. Because you have to know where to offer obeisances and what to do and this and that and how to eat, and you can't put your left hand on the ground and all these different kinds of things. You don't follow the Hari Bhakti Vilas, then they'll criticize, right? So those who knew that, they would go to these mats. So then you get to know them. And then you learn all these things, you hear all these things. And so then you know that. But if you didn't have that experience, you might not know. That's why you see Jai Patakamars is so strong on not giving any, you know, how you say, finger or toe hold to anything from the Gaudiya Math. Because before there was an ISKCON temple, he and Achyutananda lived in the Gaudiya Math for 2 years. There was no center. So that was before, you know, we actually had temples in that in India. So I think it was the first time Prabhupada went over, then I think he took Kirtanananda, and I'm not sure who else was there, but then Achyutananda and Jai Patakamars came. And then everybody else went back to America. They stayed, so there's no place to stay. They stayed in the Gaudiya Math. So that's why they knew Bengali so well, the kirtans, you know, the dress. They knew everything about the thing because they grew up with them. And at that time, there was a good standard. So they know the Math. They know the how it works. So that's why when they say, no, just want to come and give a lecture and do this and that. And others will be thinking, well, maybe, and Jai Bhajan will say, no. Because he knows how they work. You know, and so as soon as you get that, you give a lecture and then talk to people and then inspire them and, oh, but here, but no, but they wouldn't want me to like that. No, you know, I wouldn't want to discuss like that. No, but it's okay. I'll talk to them. Okay, great. No, I don't have to talk to the president. They'll talk to the president whether they can get initiated by me. You know, so like this. So he knows them, so he wouldn't give them the time of day. But at the same time, he's the one who's leading. You know, that they, you know, when they worship Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on his appearance or disappearance day, that we do, everybody does it together and all that. He's the one that leads that. But as far as any intimacy, forget it. It's formal. Our attitude towards any other mat is formal. That's all. They're a different line. They're a different family. Ultimately, it's the same, you know, group, the same gotra. But it's still, you know, it's just like you're there and you have your cousins, but they're a different family. So what their father says is what they do. And so you could be friendly, but you are different families. So it's like that. Yeah, so that's all. So we can be pleasant and nice. The philosophy is the same. You don't have to worry about that. Just don't, you know, talk about separation and, you know, Raghunuga Bhakti with the, if they're coming from Narayan Maharaj's Math, because then you might find Govardhan Babaji or Nimbarka philosophies mixed, you know. And most won't even understand that, yes.
When a devotee hears what you just said, the ultimate goal is the same, mood is different. One might say, well, but I joined ISKCON not even knowing the whole menu. So the
great, because you didn't have to.
The question is, what is the principle according to which a devotee joins this or that mood?
According to how Krishna arranges it. Depends upon your mood, then Krishna arranges it. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, when the living entity sincerely wants to know God, then he puts him in contact with the bona fide spiritual master. So that's there. I means personally, I wouldn't have any problem with a person who's never met ISKCON, doesn't know anything about ISKCON, and then they have met these Gaudiya Math, you know, preachers, and then in that way became involved and connected with their mat. That you can't say boo about that. That's fine, because Prabhupada said there's many societies, right? And he was expecting his godbrothers to go out and preach, and naturally they would have been their disciples, but it would have been one, you know, it would have been the Gaudiya Math, all everybody together and everybody's preaching. But they didn't want to. They were afraid they'd be swallowed up by Prabhupada's, because his was so well organized, while theirs wasn't. And, you know, so that's fine. I only have a complaint about someone who has been picked up from the gutter here by Prabhupada's devotees, and then thinking there's something superior over there when there's not. It's exactly the same thing. That is not what you'd call, that has the problems of loyalty and chastity and those kind of things like that. They may complain, but who cares? I don't. Like that. But, you know, if it's somebody you've known from before and they're there, then, you know, your relationship, whatever is based on the relationship, that's there. But, you know, their allegiance, you don't go there. You know, you see them, you're nice, you interact, however, like that. Does that make sense? But the point is there is going to be a difference. Because, yeah. Yes. Yes.
It's quite high standards like that. So how
it's quite high standards.
Yeah. So how could you kind of explain how that should be applied in our mind?
Means that's what we're trying to cultivate. We should understand what that is and try to come to that position. And it means that we know that this is what is the standard, you know, of character and everything like that and commitment. So that's what we're trying to do. So if we're trying, then that's you could say similar as having, right? Does that make sense? So whenever we're talking about these different elements in a negative way, we're talking about it if someone has a problem with following some aspect of the devotional process. And instead of in the normal fashion, that anartav nivriti means you're working to, you know, avoid things that aren't good for devotional process, you start to rationalize and justify that it's perfectly fine and normal. That's not anartav nivriti, you know. It's not nishta, it's not bhajana kriya, it's not anything. So that's what we're criticizing. But if someone is trying to, but is, you know, not yet successful in removing a weed, but that's doesn't matter. It's just time. You follow the process, everything will go. That's what it says. Someone who's chanting Hare Krishna, then they will develop all the qualities of the demigods. It'll happen. It's just a matter of they stick to it. They're steady. But if you start to rationalize, means you're not trying anymore. Or are unwilling to try. So that's then a problem. So that's why we'll speak strongly on that point. But that somebody has attachment, that's not the problem. That's why it's sometimes misunderstood. How is it we can be so broad on the one side but so strict on the other? No, it's the attitude. The attitude, if one sees the chanting as the main process, and one is trying to follow, though one's not successful, that's glorious. But if someone's chanting but not putting the emphasis on that and justifying what is their, you know, the mundane position, and then even trying to show how mundane elements are take precedent over devotional service, this we don't have the time of day for. That's just worse than useless, right? Better a mudha. They keep their mouth shut. Right, they're too busy just working like a donkey. Right, but when they make up philosophies, then Manu's quite strong on it. like that. You follow a bogus philosophy, you'll get the effect, you know, naturally. You preach a bogus philosophy, you'll get 100 times the bad effect. Right? So you don't want to preach your nonsense. You want to keep it to yourself. Yes. Yeah, but that's another area. Why not within the ISKCON area? You know what I'm saying? You have hundreds of people because they're also functioning in the neophyte mentality that only the Diksha Guru, that's the only guru. Right? It means this is the problem of devotees with gurus is created by the neophytes themselves, not by the process. We'll try to blame the process. Or try to blame ISKCON. It's not. It's that the neophyte, a person first comes in contact with Krishna consciousness, right? Means he'll be impressed by so many people, so many preachers. And as time goes, those relationships will develop. So he may have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different senior men, senior devotees that he will have that faith in. Right? That are inspiring. Now the natural things with time, one of those will become the Diksha Guru. Right? Whoever's the most prominent. So that would be the natural flow, right? And one understands is their connection, you know, to Prabhupada is through that person, at the same time as the instructions that they're getting are directly from Prabhupada through that person. You know what I'm saying? It's not your guru's instructions, it's Prabhupada's instructions. That's the meaning of the Adi Guru, is that there is no other instruction than his instruction, right? As far as the Diksha line, you're a disciple of Prabhupada's disciple, but as far as siksha, you're following the siksha of Prabhupada, but you're hearing it through your guru, right? So after 100 generations, it's still going to be your guru and Prabhupada. You know what I'm saying? It means as we go down, we're not going to take off, you know, Jagannath Das Babaji, you know, because now and then put one more and then take another, Bhaktivinoda will go in another, and after a while, you won't see anybody here. No, it's always going to be Prabhupada and the four before him, and then our guru. That's how when you have Adi Guru, that's how it works. You know, you may have your particular line back like that, the Diksha line, but it's the Siksha line that's important, right? Because between Narottam and Vishwanath, there's four Diksha Gurus. But in Siksha, then it's the same line. You understand? So you take the Siksha connection. Does that make sense? He has his Siksha Gurus. But what happened? Go back to the 80s. What happened? When now, you have six Siksha Gurus. One of them becomes prominent, you take initiation from him. Now, what do all the other neophyte devotees expect you to do? All of your now God brothers and God sisters. What do they expect? Means they'll expect that you give up that association of those other five, because otherwise then you're not chaste to your guru. He's the prominent of the Siksha Guru, but it doesn't mean others are not there, right? Just because you have your father in the family, does that mean there are no uncles and cousins and brothers and all that? There's only him and that's it? That's the problem. So now what happens if something happens? The mood changes or the guru falls. Then what? Then you have nobody. Because you've already rejected your Siksha Gurus in the name of being chaste, and then when something happens here to the Diksha Guru, you have nothing. And then what? Then you feel like you're starting all over again, you know, this and that. But now if one out of six left, you still have five. Though that one, of course, is the prominent one, so there's definitely a loss. But you don't feel that everybody's lost. You know, it's just like if you only had all your family members, but then you only connected with your father, and then you and your father left the, you know, the family and had nothing to do with them. Then if your father dies, you're on your own. But if you're in the family with the father and everybody, if the father dies, you have everybody else. It's a loss, but you still have everybody else. So this is the problem that's been going on. And then in that, most were able to make that connection there somewhere. And some of them took years, 10, 15 years. And some of them then, you know, went like that. Does that make sense? Yes.
But then living in a spiritual family like this can be powerful. So then it seems to be the Dixigur's responsibility to train the disciples to be
It means that is, but even if he's not, that's why you have Siksha Gurus. Somebody, point is you get everything. You know what I'm saying? The nice thing is, the nicest is you sit down and they come with all the preparations as you need them and serve them. But if not, if you know they're sitting there and one guy's got one preparation and his spoon, you have to go up and get it from each of the different things, but you'll get a full meal. Right? That's the thing. So that's the idea. It should work that way. That's ideal. But as you see, is that idealness has actually just been reestablished by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada. Before that, their Diksha and Shiksha gurus much of the time were different people, in different, even different lengths. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his Diksha guru is Bipin Bihari Goswami. So as far as Diksha goes, he's a bona fide connection. But as far as Siksha, forget it. So Siksha, then he took from Jagannath. So therefore, Jagannath is the main guru.
Was it the official Siksha in a way, like from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur? And between Bhaktivinoda Thakur and
it means it's understood that it's there, but there's no ritual. But the Siksha is what Siksha is all that's required. See, on the liberated platform, Siksha is all that's required, right? For someone who's liberated, simply they accept someone as their instructing spiritual master. That is initiation. Just that you accepted, that's it. And they accepted you. There's no ritual. You understand? But if it's accepted, but the thing is you also need to understand the process. Because we'll take it that the Diksha Guru is Sadguru, but we won't see that the Shiksha Gurus also can be Sadguru. We'll just kind of mix them all together, right? Because as we were discussing before, you have the spiritual and you have the administrative, right? You know, or let's say the social and the spiritual. So the point is those who have the social position want to make sure that they have the top authority. So they try to present it that their authority is actually coming from the spiritual. You know what I'm saying? But there is a difference. The temple president isn't guaranteeing to take you back to Godhead no matter what. He's not saying he's going to take on your karma and all that. He just wants you to do what he expects you to do, you know, and managerially. So there is a difference. It doesn't matter how much you say this and that and what resolutions we make, there's a difference. So by mixing the two, then it makes it easy to manage today. But then tomorrow when there's a problem with the guru, then it's a complete nightmare. That still, most devotees have no idea how it works. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that the Siksha is on three levels. The Adiguru, who's the one who establishes what is Siksha, you know, that'd be Prabhupada. Then the Sadguru means the Siksha Guru who's taking you back to Godhead. So there's the one who has accepted you as, you know, informally in the way of giving instructions and taking it, has that personal relationship with you, and that who has formalized that relationship through the Pancharatra process of Diksha. But that's that one level of siksha. Then you have the preachers, right? So that's how the temple president, or you know, the senior devotee in the temple, or the sannyasi, is, or another, even another guru, is a siksha guru, because he is preaching. How you say? You're a member of the society, so he preaches to you, like that. But the reason he preaches, because you're a member of the society, not that he has necessarily a personal relationship. He might have a personal relationship, but he might not. But he's not taking that responsibility of being on the eternal platform as your guru. You understand? There's a difference. In other words, you're preaching for their benefit, but you're not taking the responsibility of their life spiritually. Does that make sense? Right? Because generally it's like, on an administrative level, you're taking responsibility managerially. But if they get up and leave and go to another temple, or you stop being the president, you don't have that connection anymore. You may be friends or like that, but you don't have that spiritual connection that you're going to take them back to Godhead. That's why I'm saying there's a difference. So when they make these resolutions, they have to understand there's a difference. One social, one spiritual. For us, our social is connected to spiritual, but it's still connected to, you know, like that. So that's the element. Does that make sense? Right. So that's the aspect that we're trying to define here. Then we can see the difference. Then we know how to deal with it. Because the spiritual master, he's willing to take one back to Godhead. That's why there's that allegiance, that annoying allegiance of the disciple to his guru over the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master will take him back to Godhead. And the temple president will manage him as long as he's in his temple. As soon as you leave his temple, then, you know, he doesn't technically have any responsibility. You know, like that, because now you're in a different yatra. It's their business to manage you. Because management is there to see that you're doing, you know what I'm saying? So that means that the president would see he's doing service to the spiritual masters by organizing that his disciples are properly engaged. And the spiritual master should appreciate that. So it should naturally, you know what I'm saying? In other words, one doesn't get in the way of the other, the spiritual, the other doesn't get in the way of the managerial. Because they're two different areas. So it's like, you know, someone's in the kitchen and someone's in the book go down. You know, they don't get in each other's way. You know, he doesn't come in the kitchen and tell him, you know, how he should cook, and the other doesn't tell him how he should organize his books. You know, does that make sense? So it naturally should function because it's two different areas. Does that make sense? But unfortunately, we always try to blend things because it seems to have that pragmatic element that it'll work better. It's more efficient if we just mush everything together, and then it makes it very easy. But that's what I'm saying. It's more like niti, you know, unscientific niti. But the problem with niti is short-lived. So unless niti is applied knowing dharma, so you know that at this point I can apply niti, get something done, but I don't go against dharma because dharma will be maintained. Then you get both the immediate and the long-term. But much of the time, we're satisfied to get the immediate, right? As I was saying, if in a meeting we worked out a plan, everybody's like, great, fine, you know, it's done. Because that's the last one expects to hear from it. And who knows who, you know, supposedly, theoretically, someone's going to take care of it. But it worked at that moment. But in the next moment, in the religion of management means if you don't follow up, it doesn't happen. And if you don't pick the right person to do it that has the qualification and empower them, it doesn't happen. That part of the equation is not followed. So dharma is not followed, only the niti. So it doesn't work. It doesn't last longer than the discussion in the room. And, you know, it exists in the, how you say, on the internet because somebody sent it out as an email, but that's where it ends. You know what I'm saying? Because you're not considering the bigger. So the element is that then the guru, the means the temple president, the parents, senior Vaishnavas, your preachers, they're all, because they're all preachers. That's what the category is called, the preachers. Right? So they are the third level of this. So what they're speaking is no different. They're speaking what Prabhupada says. The only difference between them and the Sadguru is that they're, one is preaching to specifically take you back to Godhead, and the other is they're preaching to the members of ISKCON so that they all, you know, progress in spiritual life. So it means going back to Godhead, but you're not taking the responsibility. Sadhu, we can call it sadhu, call it, yeah, guru sadhu, yeah, guru sadhu and shastra, yeah, so that's sadhu, like that. So there's a hierarchy, but at the same time they're the same. But so one has to be able to see they're the same because the same instruction is there, the same purpose is there. But at the same time there's a difference that there is a hierarchy, you know, like that. So it's these kind of, you know, does that make sense? Yes.
I mentioned these Babajis. Could you briefly explain their philosophy? Is it more to Nimbarka or different?
I would just say each group, Radhakund is different and Govardhan is different. They're two different groups of Babajis, and how much they get along, I don't know. Because Radhakund is a part of Govardhan, but somehow or another, there's some slight difference in their flavor. Exact, I wouldn't be able to say at this point. But basically, what we're talking about here with the coming from the Babajis is that within the neophyte stage, then one can actively be functioning on the spontaneous platform, right? And their definition of spontaneity is the enthusiasm to always be reading and discussing the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis. Right, so that's where we'll differ, right? Because spontaneous doesn't mean, and they'll feel it's beyond the rules, when in actuality, it's that you're so accomplished at the rules that you can function in an inspired way, right? Because otherwise, where does inspiration come from? Rupa Goswami says inspiration is endeavor with intelligence. So intelligence means you're applying yourself. It's not just the feeling. He didn't mention the mind there. But endeavor means the mind's involved. But it's the mind's involved, controlled by intelligence. That will be Utsahan. Right? Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes there is that, so when we say the Nimbarka aspect, we mean that there's the feelings of separation aren't actually the important element. Some bogs higher than Vipralamba. That's their idea. Our presentation is Vipralamba is higher than some bog. Right? So they accept that Vipralamba is there, but it's not actually there. They think they're separated, like the Prem Sarovar pastime. Radha and Krishna are both there, and there was a bee flying around Radharani, and it was bothering. She was getting scared, so Madhu Mangal chased the bee away. So the bee can be known as Madhu, right? And Madhu also means Krishna. So then he very kind of like smilingly said, Madhu is gone. Meaning the bee is gone, but it could also mean Krishna is gone. And she just heard Krishna is gone, so she immediately went into these feelings of separation. Though Krishna was sitting exactly right next to her. But it's just the emotion was so powerful. And then Krishna, you know, becoming overwhelmed by that, thought Radharani was gone. And so that the tears of separation made Prema Sarovar. So that's how the Nimbarkas will look at Vipralamba. There's the feeling that it's there, but they're not actually separated. Because if they're actually separated, then that means there's an element that Krishna, that independence is not there, because if they're always together, you're always in the women's world. You're always in control. So if there, then he's going beyond. He does have that independence as the masculine entity. That's aspect. It also means then you can do what you like. Krishna can do and interact as he pleases. So to be able to accept that in a lover is so much greater than in an environment that you feel full control over. You know what I'm saying? So it's a very subtle difference. So that makes the difference between the sampradayas. Right? And then the other thing is that spontaneous just means that you read about, you know, Krishna and the gopis' pastimes, and that makes you advanced and all this and that. But the problem is that if that were true, that was exclusively it, Lalita's kunj, you know, which will be, you could say, one of the main kunjas in Radhakund, on the walls of her kunj, she has paintings of Krishna killing the demons. You know, so if they were all into this Gopi Bhav stuff, wouldn't it be all Radha and Krishna and all that? No, pictures of Krishna killing demons. Because for the gopis, rasa is rasa. It's their same Krishna who's doing all this variety. That's why, you know, Braja Jana Ranjana. We can appreciate that how Mother Yashoda and all the others have these relationships with Krishna. It's rasa. But it reminds you of Krishna who you have your rasa with. Does this make sense? So there's not a problem here. You know? They don't have a problem. The Babaji's have a problem. That's why Prabhupada didn't appreciate that, simply that focus in that way. Because even if it is focused in that way, if it's perceived in that way, that means you don't know what you're doing. Right? The example, there's one example given of the behavior of someone in Raghunuga Bhakti. Right? Only one example is given. That of the wife who has a paramour. Right? So she does her duties as her wife even better than a normal wife would. Right? To make sure that no one ever thinks she has a paramour. So that means the person who's actually situated in Raghunuga would perform the Vaidhi Sadhana better than the other Vaidhi Sadhakas, because the others don't have that focus. Right? The wife is, she does as she feels, when she feels, as the husband inspires. But here she'll always do it nice because someone else is inspiring her. You know what I'm saying? So you'll follow the rules better because of your inspiration from Krishna. That's Raghunuga Sadhana. So therefore, if they figure it out that you're totally absorbed in the gopis and that's it, you know what I'm saying? That's what they see you always doing. That means you don't know what you're doing. Does that make sense? That's the thing. Okay? Yes.
So we imagine this fallacy that neophytes stay focus exclusively on the Siksha.
Yes.
Without
recognizing the Siksha. But you just preach in the beginning so that they know what the process is. It's like that here. What is the process of, you know, coming up and accepting guru and all that? Because people want to get initiated, people want to advance, so they want to know. So this has to be explained. Personally, I don't think it's really been explained anywhere. No, that's good. That's, well, I mean, the neophyteness, but the point is they have these relationships, so they should cultivate them. Why you wouldn't? You know, why would you know them? Because they come to your area, you know, or you're listening to their lectures. So now that you're initiated, it doesn't mean that they stop coming to the area and you stop associating, or you stop listening to their lectures. Because the point was is you already had a relationship with your guru before initiation and these other siksha gurus. So it was already going on in whatever was the balanced way. Now all you've done is formalize it, that this one is the primary one and the others are then supportive. That's all. So it shouldn't change your lifestyle.
Yeah.
But then you just explain, why is it not important? So it's guru, sadhu, and shastra, right? So sadhu is also important. So that's why it's there. So why just those means the senior devotees in the temple and in the community, they're also important. You know? So if these things were properly understood, you can see there would be a lot less problems. You wouldn't have the problem of the zonal acharya, you wouldn't have the breakdown after that, you wouldn't have all the reinitiation. None of that would be there. Everything would just smoothly go through. But it's because of our neophyteness that we don't let it, because we're too attached to the externals. Yes. Then that's their problem. Yeah, but then that should be explained that that's not important. And if you find out someone's doing that, then you call them and say, why are you doing this? You know, everyone has their flavor. And just their relationship with you doesn't change just because they've accepted someone else as a sikshugu. In fact, that's the point. Yours won't change. The one they accept as the dikshugu will. And that'll formalize and won't have that necessarily that intimacy that you are experiencing at present. So you should actually be happy that as far as your relationship goes, you're the siksha guru and not the diksha guru. Because the point is why would you want someone to be your diksha disciple if they actually wanted to be someone else's? Why would you want that? Right? Does that make sense? Would a husband or a wife want to marry, you know, a man or woman want to marry someone who, you know, feels that it's, you know, the right thing to do to marry you, but they'd rather actually marry someone else? Would you be comfortable with that? No. You know, unless somehow or another they were way out of your league, right? You know, you're a guy off the street and she's a big, you know, somebody special. So then yes, okay, even though then... So that's my point, is that then it's like, what's the meaning? You know, someone's so desperate to have disciples. You know, there's tons of people here. You know what I'm saying? So don't worry. You know, there's plenty of time to have tons of disciples if that's what you want. Give it time. You know? It's like, you know, Hridayananda Maharaj, it was in a very short time. Because of the nature of the area where he was preaching, he had like 2,000 disciples, and then he just kind of like really cut back or slowed down. You know, so that means that it opens it up for other people. So it's like, you know, if one's worried about disciples, one doesn't have to worry. There's tons of people, and then there's Russia, right? You can always go over there. You want disciples, you can get a million of them. Just all you have to do is smile, and you're their guru. That's what Bhaktivinoda Bhava Maharaj, he told me. He says, when you go to Russia, he says, don't smile at anyone. Because as soon as you smile, you're their guru. Like that. He says, whenever I go, don't smile. Puijan had a good one once. He went there and somebody said, no, I want to be a guru. Please be my guru and that. And he says, I'm sorry, I can't this time. My wife didn't give permission. Like that. She said, I can't initiate anybody. You know, like that. So. So. Is that okay? Yes. Can you conceive that you could have relationships with your father, with your grandfather, with your uncles, and with your cousins? And in other words, chastity would mean if you somehow or another think your grandfather's your father, or your uncle's your father, or your cousin's your father. No, but if you know your father's your father, then you have these natural relationships with everybody else. You know what I'm saying? It's different. They're just the connection. What is your connection to a family? Is it your cousins? Is it your grandfather? Is it your uncles? No, the reason you're considered part of that family is because you're the child of your father. Your father is connected to the grandfather and to the uncles like that, and you're connected to him. Does that make sense? It's like that. So the point is the ability to have a broad range of relations. So that's the advantage that you could possibly say that most cultures of the world have over the, you know, your European culture, or at least the new, or let's say, is that they have such a thing as a bigger family. They actually do move together and have relations, while the Western is that if you just have a child and one parent, no one will think it's strange. It's pretty standard. If you had two parents who actually were, you know, cooperative and weren't killing each other, that would be, wow, cool. You know, and if you actually had relatives beyond that that didn't drive you nuts and that you hated, that would be really rare. That's like strange. You know, it's like nice strange, but strange. You know? You understand? But for, let's say, like Indians, there's 50 names of the different positions, what they are. Because an uncle on your mother's side and an uncle on your father's side have different names. One's Kaka, one's Mama. You know, and like this, then there's all these. And you have a different relationship with each one of them. One of them's intimate, one's formal. One on your birthday, you do this. And one on some other day, you do that. And you have all these different relationships. So you're involved with everybody throughout the year. There's something in the year that connects you specifically with that one. And you have to be, and you grow up with that, and so then you know that. You know, because every time there's a wedding, because the family's so big, there's always weddings, and so by the time you actually get married yourself, you may have been at 20, 30, 50 weddings already. You know, so you've already seen them, met them, doing everything with them, and, you know, so it works. So this idea of having, I haven't found that Indians have a problem in having their guru, who there's all, you know, all reverence in that for and commitment to, at the same time have very close, intimate relationships with other senior Vaishnavas. They don't have a problem with it. They can tell the difference like that. Westerners generally have a problem only because we don't have the practice of dealing with a wide range of association. You know what I'm saying? You know, because, you know, how you say, for the boys, you know, it means if they're the older sister, they just harass you and everything. If the younger sister, you harass them. And, you know, your mother's, you know, out at the spa and stuff like that. Grandparents, you only, you know, occasionally visit them at the home, so you don't really know them. You know, cousins and all that, then generally you never heard of them. Like that. And so for the Western boy, all girls, the only relationship is conjugal, you know, of any interest. You know what I'm saying? So it makes it very difficult to understand these fine elements. So that's why we'll define chastity in that way, because the only relation we're really committed to is like the idea of the masculine, feminine, you know, conjugal relationship, you know. Notice I didn't say husband and wife here. So so then, therefore there's a certain point, chastity means one person. So we tend to use that as the only binding family element. You know what I'm saying? And then we have friends, we can relate to friends, but we can't connect the two. Because even there you have very rare where the husband and wife are also best friends, right? Because friendship is part of it, but it's not seen, right? The parental, the friendship, the servitorship, the neutrality, or, you know, appreciation, these are all parts of the conjugal relationship, but we can only see that there's that physical intimacy. That's what defines it. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is as we become purified, we can appreciate the subtleties of relationship, and then we can broaden this, and then we'll be very comfortable, right? Does that make sense? So we have a dysfunctional social order because we ourselves are socially dysfunctional, right? So to that degree that we're not, is to that degree that we will find It works anyway. Otherwise, we'll say, no, it's the West. It's just the way it is. But if that's true, why do the Indians come over here and they have a very nice community? You know, the Asians come over here, they have their community. The Africans are here, they have their community. You know, but the Westerners are here and have always been here and they have no community. You'd think they'd be the best at it. They've been here the longest, right? You know, so. But it's just somehow or another a phenomena that's just come up with, you know, time and, you know, all these different Western philosophers and stuff like this. So they come up, and religionists, they come up with all these strange things that, without their understanding, break down the social order. You know what I'm saying? Because the Asians, they're, you know, they're basically, they're either Buddhists or Taoists, you know, like that. And if they're Christian, they're Catholics. You know, so there's some kind of tradition there, you know. You see, South America, they're all Catholics. You know, so there's that whole, there's authority in Catholicism, right? You know, like that. Or the Jews have, you know, think because there's authority. So all these, they all have this element of authority. So if someone is from in Europe, because Europe, you know, has that culture not so long back, if one's, what we, I don't know, in America we call old school, then you'll have that. But if one's not, then it's pretty, you know what I'm saying? There's nothing to work, there's no basis to start from. You know what I'm saying? It means you can cook sabji because there's sabji in the basket. But if there's no sabji in the basket, you're going to have to get some. Then you can make a sabji. So that's the difference. Does that make sense? Is that most cultures of the world already have sabji in the basket. Now it's just a matter of what to do with it. But the Westerners generally, you're lucky if you have a basket.
Not even a basket.
Yeah, they wouldn't. You just don't know. They're looking, they're needing, because they're humans, they require, but because of so much concepts of philosophy and this and that, then it's, it doesn't work. I know. Yes. No, it's only siksha if it's necessary, if you're looking, it means on that level what you're speaking, only if there's the aspect of that they're sadguru, on the second level, that they're taking responsibility to take you back to Godhead. If they're not, it's just automatic. Anybody senior is a siksha guru. You know, the temple president is siksha guru because he knows the philosophy, knows the practices, and he's organizing to see that everybody in the yatra is to the best of their abilities engaged. So he's automatically siksha guru because he's going to guide you how to connect yourself and engage yourself. All right? The senior devotees that have been in the yatra for a long time, they're automatically siksha guru because they have that experience. Does that make sense? So there's no need of formally accepting. If you feel that it's that kind of close, then you will bring it up to your spiritual master that, you know, I've always had this relationship with them and this and that along with it, and then it came. But a lot of what they say I find is, you know, practical in my life. I try to apply it and just get their, you know, their approval, because all siksha goes back to the diksha guru from two aspects. One is that so he can see that. Well, actually, three aspects. One is so that he can see that what you're hearing is proper, right? That it's it would be the proper application. Two is that you're able to understand it, so you can apply it in your life. You know, because he would tell you, but if someone else has already told you, great, right? Third is that he may want to hear that. You know what I'm saying? So by saying, telling the Diksha Guru what valuable things you've heard from the Siksha Gurus, then all these three things are accomplished. Right? And so then it's automatically understood that this person is there. Or you can also, before initiation, bring it up. Is that okay? The Diksha Guru, Diksha Guru is the Siksha Guru who has formally taken that responsibility. But there's only one Diksha Guru, but you can have unlimited Siksha Gurus. So they may also take that responsibility. Does that make sense? Like that. But it's not formalized. That's what makes the difference. In other words, you're only looking at siksha gurus, right? So the diksha guru is that one who has, it's formally established that he's the siksha guru. The other ones, it's not formally established, so they're not called diksha guru. Does that make sense? Like that. Okay, so we'll break now for a bit. So it's somehow or another, each day it's getting, today we got through 2 verses. Yesterday we did 1 page, the day before that 2 pages, before that we did about, 10 pages. So I wonder, next time we'll get down to one word, then one syllable. Then. So this first letter here, B, because the letters all mean something. Like K is Lord Brahma. A is Vishnu, like that. So we can get down to that kind of.